Welcome to Streetwise with Paul Berry, brought to you by Title Connect, an alliance of the best title agencies in the D.C. metro area. Streetwise has all of the latest and up-to-date information about local and national real estate news and strategies to help you make the right decisions. Now, here with the answers, your realtor and host, Paul Berry.
And we'd like to wish you a very happy holiday period, wherever you might be and however you celebrate. It's a pleasure to have you here on the radio with us here on Streetwise. I'm Paul Berry, your host for the next hour, with some fantastic guests, people who know what they're talking about, because I don't. But they do, and they are part of the real estate. What do I say to you about the real estate market? I say it's made up of wonderful people. People, and you don't know, the only people that you probably know is your broker, maybe, and you certainly know your realtor, but you don't know all the other people. Who designed that building? Who decided to put it there? Who paid for it? Who keeps it safe? Safe. Now, there's an interesting part, isn't it? I think we talk about, let's talk about safe today. And my guests joining me are Jennifer Epstein from Castle Systems and Mark Silverman. They are both, and by the way, folks, I don't know what this, I've never heard of this. I got to tell you, so I'm in the pot with you. They work with Castle Systems, I guess. Is that what do you call it, Jennifer?
Yep. Castle Systems.
Castle Systems. And you're regional director of multifamily at Castle Systems.
Yes.
Mark Silverman, regional director, multifamily at Castle Systems.
We love the big titles.
That's a huge title. What does it mean? What do you do, Mark?
So actually, Paul, you're a Washington institution.
I am.
And I'm a native Washingtonian as well.
Yeah.
Surprised you haven't heard of Castle. So
I haven't.
People think of Kleenex. So you want a tissue, you go to Kleenex. In commercial buildings in Washington, D.C., D.C. metro area, you want to get in your building, people say, I have my Castle card. I don't know if you have you ever heard that?
I have heard that. This is what we're doing. Okay. Which is a part of the security system, I presume.
Exactly. So, you know, Castle is a managed security provider. Really, you know, started in Washington in the early 70s, founded by an engineer who had a group of friends with commercial buildings, wanted to centrally manage them. Secure them from one place, and you know, we brought them to the cloud before the cloud was a thing. So there's a gentleman in my office jokes that we're above the cloud.
You're above the cloud. And Jennifer, so, and I'm going to presume now, multifamily means a rental building, for instance, where lots of people live. And
think of your traditional apartment community or condo building. So if you can live in it, we can secure it beyond commercial.
That's got to be, wow, okay. You know, I never think about it. I mean, how do we, look, I'm used to this guy walking around with a bunch of keys who has all the, but things are changing now, right? That's, you use technology at this point, I guess.
Correct. We actually have an app that you can use. We call it Castle Presence. And so you don't need a fob anymore. You can just go to your phone, hit a button, and enter the phone that way. Or hands-free, keep it in your purse, and just walk right through.
Wow. And is that?
It's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. But I mean, is that the latest? Where are we with this now? Are we at is something else coming in terms of the security?
So it's kind of interesting. So the Internet of Things is prevalent, you know, and yeah, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the Internet of Things, but
yeah,
they bombard our consumer space. You go to Best Buy or Target or Amazon.com and, you know, this thing connects and I lost my phone. I want my tile. Everything's connected. Then you get to an apartment building. I have a fob. I have a card. I have a code. I have a gentleman with a lot of keys. I have a doorman. Well, it's not really sexy, and it's not really current. So for the first time ever, really, the consumer market's driving the technology in multifamily and commercial real estate.
For security.
For security.
So the thing that I noted as I was kind of reviewing some of the information is that this is state of the art. I mean, we're at the point where security and how it works is just as important as the space and anything else. I want to feel secure when I come in. I want to know that things are working for me, that my stuff is going to be safe, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And they also want it to be convenient. So you want to have a safe and secure building, but you want it to be convenient for the person entering and exiting.
So Jennifer, do I still have a key to my apartment or do I not?
Yes. It depends how your apartment works. If you have a mechanical door with a mechanical key, we think that it's better to go use a fob so that we can also do a report and see the entering and exiting of a building if you so choose. If you have a key, there's no reporting. So if somebody owns this building and they want to know where the residents are, how many times they're using the fitness center, then they're able to generate a report that way.
Through the use of the fob.
Correct.
Now, and when we say fob, what are we talking about?
a little piece of plastic on the keychain. So it's funny. You know, my great-grandmother years ago was one of the original residents of the Blair's Building in Silver Spring. You know, people in Washington knew it. Back then, security was an amenity. You know, we'd come on in. You know, Washington had a lot of challenges, and the real estate market tanked, came back, tanked again, back again. And, you know, security became a necessity because of the market surrounding it. We've now gotten to the point where with technology, with listening to the voice of, you know, the residents, the stakeholders, security is now an amenity. So, you know, the fob, you want a mechanical key, great. But what happens at 2 a.m? Mm-hmm. You're out in Bethesda. I lost my key. Do I not get into my apartment? Do I not get into my building? Do you have a guy like Snyder from that old, you know, TV show?
Yeah.
He has to come let you in?
Right.
No. So now you can, you know, if you can prove that you are the right person.
You can let me in my apartment.
I can let you in remotely.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. Now, when do are we talking about retrofitting buildings now, or are we talking about only when you're putting a new building together that you use this, or how is this generated in the units, the multifamily units?
So it's kind of a great question. So it's both. So one of the things about Castle, both from commercial real estate and multifamily, the buildings we put systems in 1972, they're still functioning at the latest technological level today because we're constantly updating the infrastructure. It's part of our managed service. So you have an existing building, if it's Castle, you know, easy. Switch out a couple readers, you know, credential everybody appropriately on their phones. It works. An existing building that's not Castle, a few tweaks and twitches and there, and we can retrofit a building. New construction, it's seamless. And we love to work with designers and architects.
And are people demanding that they have this kind of service now? Is this the norm, or is it going to be the norm? Jennifer?
Yes. Properties are trying to figure out how to differentiate themselves. There are so many units coming online. How do you set yourself apart? So, yes, there's a demand on that end. And then it's also a way to make it less expensive to retrofit a building. So instead of having to put a phone system at every door, let's say it's a garden-style community and there's 30 buildings, you don't have to put a phone or an intercom at each building anymore. There's a way to go around it, and it saves owners a lot of money.
This is amazing because I don't think about that. You know, I mean, when I buy the building, when I go into a new apartment, the security is kind of is a given, or it's not a given, but I'm that's not the first thing I think of going in the door, maybe secondary. But now today, I guess maybe people are becoming a lot more security conscious than they ever were. Is that fair?
I think so. But you think about it, so if I'm a young couple, or you know, empty nesters, or somewhere in between, Saturday morning, I want to go find an apartment. I go online. There's a lot of good listing services. Print out 5 pieces of paper. Everybody looks the same. You talk about an amenities race. There's awesome amenities in these buildings. Talk about walkability in Metro. Most properties have that now.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you differentiate? So if one property has access where I can have my phone in my pocket and not have it, you know, not have to take it out to get in my door, front building door, not only will that attract me, but it's going to be cool for my friends. So it's like you buy that nice car. You want your friends to say, wow, look what Jennifer's driving. You know,
sure.
That's what I want. I'm going to pay this the rents.
I'm up to date. I'm with it. I've got the latest.
Exactly.
How big is Castle here? I mean, are you new company, or is this, how long have you been in business?
We've been around since 1972.
Really?
Correct.
You weren't even born in 1972.
No, I wasn't.
But the company has been established, right?
Correct. And we're a national company. We're actually an international company.
Are
we have
you?
An office in Sydney.
Okay.
And we're actually turning on our first commercial system in Dubai shortly.
Right. Yep. All Castle, the same company.
Yep, all Castle.
Using much of the same equipment?
Same infrastructure.
Yeah,
you know,
we've made
the technological advances over the years.
Yeah.
But if we put a system in 1972, part of our managed services, we're going to update that system so it works with the latest technology today.
All right. So from a standpoint of a developer or somebody, you know, trying to sell their units building, you become an integral part of that, saying, look, we got the latest in terms of security. We got the best systems. And so that's going to be something that's going to be attractive to me.
For sure. And if it's a new construction building, we're happy to do a design for them, which can save them a lot of money.
Okay. So that's happening as well.
Right.
Yeah. So you're retro as well as building with starting with new buildings and developing.
Right. If they just give us the blueprints, then we're happy to do some consulting and suggest where we would secure the building and how we would do it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's a way to earn their business.
How many companies are there like you? Are there
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So, you know, controlled access has been around for a long time. In multifamily, so in commercial real estate, managed service is readily, you know, recognized. Multifamily, not so much. Over the last 10 years or so, the buildings have changed. Think about what you had in before. It was a front door, back door. You had a garage. Now you have amenity spaces, dog washes and rooftop amenity decks and underground parking and everything in between. So what used to be an electrician finding a couple items at a wholesaler or an integrator, putting them on and saying, good luck to you, and a property runs it themselves. We'll come in now and figure out, what's the flow of the building? You know, this, we worked with the Lauren in downtown Bethesda, mm-hmm. one of the most unique condo properties in Washington. What do they anticipate their owners, you know, feeling like as they walk in? Because security, you know, people don't remember what you say, but they'll always remember how you make them feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, security, it can be an amenity, and it's really not going to be a big talking point. But if you feel safe and you feel kind of cool with what you have, it's going to resonate.
And then your responsibility is to maintain you maintain the security system.
So we maintain it. We monitor it. So you know, we have an operations center in Falls Church, Virginia. You know, all the signals, so elevator phones, fire panels, doors left open. Come to Falls Church. It's not a third-party monitoring.
Right. You do it. The guy that puts a burglar alarm out on the front porch, I mean, out in the front yard, is he your competition?
Not necessarily. So we're not in the homes. So it's funny, in the multifamily space, we go to the door. We hit that resident doornail, and before we never went that far.
Fascinating stuff. My guest today, Mark Silverman and Jennifer Epstein from Castle Systems. They protect you, folks. You know about them? When we come back, we'll find a little bit more about who they really are, where they're from, and why they settled here in Washington, D.C. This is Streetwise. I'm your host, Paul Berry.
In a world ripe with regulatory challenges, there exists a collaborative called Title Connect, an alliance of the leading title companies in the D.C. metro region. Principal members include Clothesline Settlements, Monarch Title, and Capital Title. Licensed in more than 40 states, Alta Best Practices, and with more than 20 fully staffed offices spread across the Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. area, we are always close by. Contact us now at TitleConnect.com for all of your residential and commercial settlement needs. TitleConnect.com.
Helping you to understand the nuanced real estate landscape, both nationally and here in the D.C. metro region. Welcome back to Streetwise with your host, the man with the sonorous voice, Mr. Paul Berry.
And my guests are Mark Silverman, Regional Director, Multifamily at Castle Systems, and Jennifer Epstein, Regional Director, Multifamily at Castle Systems. What do you do, Jennifer? I mean, what do you really, really do? I know, you know,
starting from the beginning to the end. I don't know if you want to know all that. So I am a business development manager. So my job is to work with developers, owners, property managers, and find a way to secure their building.
Okay.
Whether that's new construction or taking over existing business or, you know, there are a lot of buildings that really need our help. It's the holiday season and a community came to me. Their doors are open at all times. And so packages are being stolen. A long time ago, that wasn't a thing. Now with Amazon, that's happening more and more. So my job is to really help these communities.
And could you stop that?
Yeah. So we are actually looking at Castle Presence, which is our hands-free solution. So as opposed to putting a phone or intercom at all of their buildings, they are going to opt this way. So it's easy for their residents and nice on their bank account.
Yeah. So this is so cool. I mean, that these systems, that we're taking advantage of the new technologies, the new things that we can use. Where are you from?
I'm from Charleston, South Carolina.
Charleston, South Carolina. What brought you to Washington?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Was he? You know, when I get an answer like that, Mark, who was the guy?
It's always somebody.
It didn't work out, but here you are, and we're glad you're here.
No, it's more I didn't feel like I was growing personally or professionally anymore, and D.C. is, you know, the place to be for that.
Yeah. Where school did you go to?
University of South Carolina.
Okay, so you're South Carolinian all the way through.
Through and through.
What about you, Mark? Where are you from?
A native Washingtonian, Rockville. I grew up in. Went to Wooten High School.
Yeah. Single, married?
Married. You know, my wife's Emily. Two great little kids.
Do you?
Three
How old
and
are
seven.
They? Three and seven. What's their names?
Andrew is my son, seven, and Kate is
That's
three.
That's wonderful. And you're staying in, why Washington, D.C.? Because you were born here, or you something know, about this town that you like?
I love Washington. Yeah. I left to go to school at Syracuse.
Okay.
And, you know, my grandfather, you know, again, another native Washingtonian, yeah. and, yeah. you know, was, you know, instrumental in the business community, and he had friends, and somebody said to me, you know, 1998, as I was graduating college, Lenny Levin, you shook his hand, you know you had a deal, and yeah. that's why we did business with him, and it kind of resonated. And, you know, I look up to my grandfather, and I kind of stayed in Washington to kind of emulate his success.
Sure. Well, you know, when you do a business like this, you look for ways to grow that business. To do other things because you know the technology, you have the contact. Are you doing that now?
I wouldn't say that I'm...
No cameras going up all over the place?
Oh, yes. I didn't realize you're talking. So beyond access control,
yeah,
what else
I just
do we
mean,
do?
As a company, and folks, we were talking about it during the break, that you guys are now involved in some of the processes of protecting the city on a larger scale.
Yeah. So we have a program called Capital Shield. Mm-hmm. It's a public-private program that we have put together with MPD. So the Metropolitan Police Department has worked with us, and Chief Lanier, before she left, has a great relationship with our owner, Mark Ein. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to put this together because we really don't have enough cameras around the city. And so we are able to subsidize exterior cameras so that apartment communities, commercial buildings can have these cameras, and they're tied back to the Metropolitan Police Department. So if anything happens, they have a username and passcode, and they can go in and pull the footage.
Well, so they have the right to take a look if something's going on to see, because they do have the password.
They sign an addendum so right. that they know that they can only see the exterior, and it's only after an incident. They're not just watching the cameras at any time.
Something causes them to take a look.
Correct.
Okay. How widespread is it?
So I think we were trying to get 1,000 cameras, right, Mark?
About 700. So, Paul, have you ever met Mark Ein, our owner?
I don't think so.
Maybe, amazing gentleman. So I was at an event with him recently, and they said, why give? You know, why do things like Capital Shield?
Right, right.
Because we live here.
Yeah.
You know, I could not have come up with an answer like that.
It's a great answer. It's, yeah, it's,
so you look at the London bombings, the Boston, you know, they could follow the individuals through public or private cameras.
Yeah.
D.C. had less than 100. So with the Capital Shield program, we're taking properties that wouldn't have the funds to put these cameras up. We'll put them up at a subsidized rate, really donating most of it. And in return, if something happens, then MPD can look. But if an officer is responding to a 911 call, they're not blind.
Yeah.
Somebody at the operation center can see what they see.
It just makes sense. I mean, today, especially since we do have the technology. And I don't buy this business about, oh, somebody's watching me all the time. That's not the point of this. The point of this is to make sure that we can keep you as safe as possible.
Yep.
By making sure if something does happen, we can follow through. And, you know, if somebody's going to try to break, and he knows there's a camera watching, or he's likely to be seen, that's a deterrent, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes
if something happens to you, the first thing you're going to say is, was there a camera?
Absolutely.
Who has the footage?
That's right. That's right.
The other people are saying, oh, Big Brother. It's not Big Brother. Somebody's not watching 24/7.
Yeah. No, I think that's, I mean, in the applications, what you're proving here is that with the technology and with innovation, you can come up with a lot of different ways that you can make it a safer place for all of us to live.
Exactly. And that same technology that Capital Shield is a system called Castle Video. You know, the gentleman that created Castle Video was on the team that did the NFL first down line. It's cloud-based video. So the buildings used to have a box somewhere, DVR, NVR.
Right, right.
First time ever, the camera stores the footage itself. Has a smart analytics, looks for a person, vehicle, emotion, or something else you've asked us to look for, notices it, takes a clip, sends it to the cloud where it stores it. At the same time, let's say it's a pool, and it's a pool at 11 o'clock at night, nobody should be there. Camera's going to send a text message or an email alert to somebody on call.
Wow. That's exciting, really.
Property managers like it, and we had a big snow last year.
Yeah.
Property managers could not get to their properties, but I'm sure they were getting big snow bills. Well, they could look at the cameras. Oh, 4 hours? Really? I think you guys were there for 35 minutes. Had a big plow. You got it done quickly. Not 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah. And what about with the systems that you use in apartment buildings, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
Does that work for office buildings? I mean, is it the same technology, or can it, or is it being used?
No, it is. So, you know, the office buildings have the camera. You know, office buildings is where Castle really, you know, created itself.
Okay.
But, you know, it's different. So an office building may have a front desk. So we have a visitor management platform. You can, you know, pre-approve visitors. Might have turnstiles. You know, turnstiles is really big in Philadelphia and New York. Mm-hmm. They're coming to Washington. But every system talks to one another. It's funny, you know, our chief technology officer, you know, has helped develop something called Play, P-L-A-I. With this technology, we can integrate with others like Active Directory. So if I'm a commercial office tenant and I have access control with my phone or with my fob and I'm terminated or I leave, you know, for whatever reason, the HR file gets closed. Active Directory, the credentialing is automatically out.
It doesn't work anymore. That's fascinating. So that would happen automatically. Somebody or somebody would say, "Hey, okay, time to turn off the fob." So it doesn't.
Before you'd have to remember to turn off the fob. And you know, you'd have to get the fob back, and you got to hope it's all perfect.
No, this is very exciting. I think. Where do we? Where does DC fit in the scheme of things? Are we ahead of the game, behind the curve in terms of how this is happening?
So DC really was the originator of managed services for access control.
Okay.
So we're at the forefront. You know, Castle System started in Arlington, Virginia in 72. So from there, you know, DC, Maryland, Virginia, of course. You know, offices in New York, you know, Houston is a huge market.
Mm-hmm.
LA and San Francisco. Philadelphia is very active as well.
Is your business people intensive or not? Or is it equipment intensive?
We make it people intensive.
Okay.
So it's equipment, right? So, you know, access control, you got to put, you know, infrastructure up. That's where we differentiate from everybody else. For us, it's how are we interacting? Are we really an extension of your property manager? Are we making your lives easier? If it's Christmas Eve at 10 p.m. and you can't get in the front door, are we going to come out within, you know, a short period of time and fix it? Or are we going to say, maybe get somebody out. Maybe time and materials. Maybe you pay me overtime. No, there's no maybe. Yeah. You're gonna call. Joe's gonna answer the phone. Joe's been there for 30 years. He's gonna get a technician out, and then we're gonna be out there,
getting it done. What needs to be done? So, what do you see in the future? What's gonna happen next?
You know, that's a pretty good question.
Or what should happen from your perspective? I mean, how does Castle say, okay, we're ready for the next big thing? Or does it work that way? Maybe it doesn't work that way in terms of security.
I think I'm too low on the totem pole for them to tell me.
Well, you know what I was saying, guys? Look, we all know that if you discover something and it works, the bad guys are working hard to discover what's next that keeps it from working. And I'm not sure that they can defeat this. I'm not sure they're able to defeat it.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a next big thing. So, you know, our customers, you know, they're going to tell us, you know, where they want. So they wanted, you know, the phone and the mobile access. And, you know, we've heard and we're delivering. But really, you know, if we deliver a hospitality level customer service experience, that's the big thing. So if we're helping you get from where you are to where you want to be and keeping you there and you feel great about it, you know, JD Power certified, then there's no magic bullet. There's no...
Yeah.
Nothing's going to, you know, change the industry. It's, you know, we're your partner. And, you know, it's that customer service experience that's really going to help us get there.
If somebody wants to know more about Castle and about you and talk to you and reach out to you, how do they do that?
They can call me. They can email me. I'm nervous to just put it out there to
the
world.
Well, give us your corporate address.
If you just go to www.castle, and Castle's with a K.com, then we have a great marketing team, and they will make sure that they give us the lead.
Yeah. Okay.
So. And you know, actually, if you're on LinkedIn, you know, please seek Jennifer and myself out on LinkedIn. So Mark with a C, Mark Silverman and Jennifer Epstein.
Well, Jennifer is beautiful. That's why she's not putting it out there. Mark, he's a good.
Look at her on LinkedIn. You'll want to swipe.
Thanks so much, folks, for being with us. A pleasure to talk with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You too.
All right, and see you next time.
Okay. Definitely.
This is Streetwise. Coming up next, what about this market? What's happening? We have the expert to talk to you about that. We'll be right back. When it comes to real estate, location is everything. And when it comes to finding the right location, the right realtor is everything. So if you're looking for your dream place near St. Michael's or Oxford on Maryland's Eastern Shore, Amy Berry is the right person for you. As a native of St. Michael's, she loves watching people discover the beauty of her home. The miles of shoreline and breathtaking sunsets, not to mention the low prices that will capture your attention right away. Come discover the beauty of Talbot County by giving Amy Berry a call at 410-310-0441. Again, at Meredith Real Estate, Amy Berry at 410-310-0441.
For program updates on the show and to listen to past shows, check out our website at StreetWiseRadioShow.com. That's StreetWiseRadioShow.com.
Oh, it's a new day. It's a new day, folks. Here we are on this side of the election, not yet through the, what do you call it, Elliot? You call it the inauguration, I think it's where we're headed to, right? And that Elliot would be Elliot Eisenberg, a nationally acclaimed economist and public speaker, specializing in making the arcana and the minutiae of economics fun, relevant, and educational. And we can testify to that. This is not his first ride on our hay wagon. He was here a few months ago and really lit the place up with a lot of responses and great information and thoughtful content about what it meant then when we were looking at the possibilities that we would have a wholesale change in our administration of this country to now the reality that we have a whole different approach, if you will. And everything, I think, would be safe to say, Elliot, is reacting to it. Everything is reacting to him.
Indeed. We know so little that we're looking to tea leaves every day and, oh my gosh, this is different. And we know one new thing that Mattis is now going to be Secretary of the Defense, or Flynn is going to be this, or Chao is that. And this, we all hope this gives us insight because we know so little. So there's lots of volatility as a result,
absolutely,
much too much than there should be.
And I wonder, you know, without, well, yeah, let's go directly at saying, I as a member of the media, as a journalist, as a newscaster, I don't think we did our job in terms of vetting this candidate. I think we got caught up in his world. He figured out how to do it. He figured out how to off-balance and the media. He figured out how to get his issue out there without having to even be responsible for it. You tweet something at 3 o'clock a.m. in the morning, and you say whatever you want to say. At 6 o'clock, it appears on CNN. Nobody said, is it true or is it not? This is just what he said. Nobody got the chance to question and say, how? Show me. Prove it. And yet, he was on every day on almost every media, not only in the United States, across the world. I don't think that was healthy.
No, clearly it was not. But he was like a train wreck waiting to happen. Everybody was looking forward to seeing him melt down. And what was the crazy thing he's going to say today? So all the media, they gave him this tons of earned media. He got hundreds of millions of dollars of earned media. Right.
Yeah.
So he got those free. He got all this free publicity.
Yeah.
And it was, what's the new word now? We have post-truth society.
It's amazing.
We're not better off for this here. I think it's important that we keep people accountable for what they say and what they do to the extent that we can.
Absolutely.
Everyone gets excited. Obama got a bit of a free hand, I think, back in 08 as well. So there's this euphoria of new and exciting and different and challenging and whoa. And Trump was, of course, totally different than Obama. But nonetheless, they both got a lot of free PR.
If you think about what he did and how he did it, it is really brilliant.
He's a genius.
He's a genius. You know,
I hope he can run as well. I hope his political skills are as genius. His geniusness is as good there.
And the interesting thing that gives me some hope is that men and women, not so many women so far, but men and women of goodwill who we have respect for, who we respect their vision and their political savvy, if you will, walk in there. And they don't come out saying, oh, my God, you know, I can't. That's not what they say. They come in and say, we had the former.
Oh, Romney.
Yeah, Romney.
Man.
And then not Dole, but the former vice president who.
Gore.
He comes out and he says, we had a, you know, good conversation. And I respect Gore. And he didn't come out saying, oh, my God, what have we done? So maybe within that, that's an acorn of you know, perhaps what we're really facing here.
I'm optimistic here. Optimism is free, right?
It
doesn't guarantee us anything. Obviously, it's not a policy. It's not a strategy. But like everybody, all the other listeners here, we all live in the United States. We all want to see him succeed. I want to see Obama succeed. I want to see W succeed. I want every president to succeed.
Yeah.
Whether I vote for them or not, it's over. It's done. Let's get on with the show here. Let's wish him the best and help him as best we can.
And I think that's possibly the way most Americans feel. That, look, okay, that might not have been my choice, or maybe it was.
Right.
Okay, but here we are. we're in America. We have a great country that's doing all the things it can and should do and can do more, and we're going to be okay. Are we?
I think we will be. I mean, this is not... Presidents have a hard time. They don't have the power they think they have in many cases. They have to work with Congress. There's international pressures,
right.
treaties, and so on and so
Obama's
forth.
Obama's proving that. You know.
Right. I mean, I think he came in with a much bigger agenda, and at the end, he couldn't do it. He went through executive order. Now, I'm sure Trump will try and reverse some of those, but that's not – those are easy to do, but other stuff is hard. Regulatory things, even those, but the bureaucracy is not so easy to change. Lots of inertia, the Supreme Court, and so on and so forth. It's a system that works pretty well no matter what happens.
Let's talk about a couple of things that have occurred here this past week. Number one, the president-elect had something to say about Boeing and the cost of an airplane, and their stock plummeted and then came back up. And then a couple of days later, after he named another cabinet member, the stock went up over 200 points or somewhere over there. What's going on?
It's just nervousness. No one knows anything. And I can't say, I mean, you know, there was the carrier thing and the Boeing thing. Then there was Rexnord, another company he hit on. This is not a great way. I think it gives red meat to his base.
Yeah.
That shows that I'm sticking it to the, you know, the American military industrial complex or manufacturing. But I'm bringing jobs back. But I'd much prefer to see more fundamental change. Let's improve the tax structure. Let's lower tax rates. Not necessarily lower taxes, but lower rates, broaden the base, the corporate level, discourage firms from leaving, actually encourage firms to come. Let's spend money on K-12. Let's spend money improving community colleges. Let's figure out like a laser. Let's focus at like a laser how to improve the labor productivity, because that's the only thing that raises our standard of living.
Is he that smart?
Time will tell.
The interesting thing, the reason I ask that question is ultimately, when we think what you will of Donald Trump, what you have to know is that he's been a successful businessman. With those successes being, you know, you can look at the ups and downs. But unlike most of us, he's a billionaire.
He's done better than I have, right? Yeah.
Unlike most of us, he is a billionaire. So the question is this part of his plan? Is he smart enough? I think he's smart enough to be.
He's certainly smart enough. But you know, they say things he doesn't read much. He's not very inquisitive. That may not matter. Jimmy Carter was the smartest guy we ever had in the White House, or recently. He was terrible.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan, by contrast, wasn't terribly hands-on, did a pretty good job. It all depends. I mean, I just don't want to see him be ribbon cutter-in-chief. Mm. That's my big concern. He's got to stick to the big issues, focus on what's really important, and let the minions do the rest here.
He's not doing well in that. I mean, you know.
No, he seems to enjoy the limelight quite a lot.
He does.
That makes me nervous, and that makes Wall Street a little nervous, but... circumstances will bring him down a peg or two, right? Every president walks in thinking they own the world and I got the agenda, and then suddenly something happens in Asia or Europe or a bomb goes off and everything's off the rails.
From your point of view, and we're talking with Elliot Eisenberg, a wonderful economist who can break it down to where all of us can understand it. And as you know, I guess I reflect what so many other Americans, as I said, those who are for and against, that we want them to be successful. Ultimately, as you said, I live here.
Right.
I live in America. It's not like, oh, look, let's just watch and see this guy blow up. I don't want that. I don't want that to happen. And I'm watching in the market, and I know you're watching the market, as an indicator of what people are thinking, not only here but around the world, because people buy and sell stock from all over the world, and our markets are triggered by this. What is it telling you so far?
The markets are very enthusiastic. It's very interesting. You know, the moment we knew he would win on, that was the election night around, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. Asset prices start to collapse.
Yes,
but within 6 or 7 hours, it had turned around, and since then we've had a tremendous rally. The stock markets hit all kinds of highs, but on the Dow Jones, on the S&P 500, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ have all done well. The expectation really is now, the market really believes that all the bad things, the dark Donald, if you will, there's not going to be a dark Donald. We're not going to have deportations of millions of illegal immigrants. We're not going to have a trade war with China, Canada, and Mexico. And we're going to have the good things. We're going to have tax reform, some spending on infrastructure. This is all going to be, we're going to have some good stuff, no bad stuff, or we're off and running. Let's hope it's right.
And let's hope it's right because, you know, the point that you just make, someone said last week, and I forget what media, I would certainly quote them as that, what is it going to be like when the masses realize that he's a snake oil salesman when it comes to a lot of the things that he said that he was going, that he's just simply not going to do. He's not going to put her in jail. He's not going to build a wall.
No.
You know, he's not going to do a lot of the stuff that he said he would do because he needed it to get elected.
And I wonder if that's why he's hitting these companies like Boeing and Rexnord, now pharmacy companies. I'm in favor of cheap drugs. I mean, we're all in favor of an expense. Yeah. I'm in favor of, you know, free cars and free housing and everything. Yeah. So this is some of it, at least rhetorically, he can give his constituents and his base what they want if he can't do it in legislation and so on.
Yeah, now, the other thing that I noted, too, and I'm sure you did, is that he went back on the campaign trail to get his attaboys. And I'm assuming that that's because he's still got to get there, that once he gets there, once he becomes president, not president-elect, that will stop. But I was bothered by the need to go out and have people tell him, you know, we beat her, we really beat her, we really, that, you know, that wasn't very presidential.
It's poor form, certainly, at best. Yeah. You can think it, but you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't laugh at your own jokes. It's the same thing.
So what do you think? You think that was, as you say, you know, I'm putting you in a position because you can't answer.
Right,
we don't know.
But what we do know is his appointees. I mean, there's certainly been Steve Bannon, which I think has caused a lot of people a lot of anxiety around.
Was it as bad as some people think, from your perspective?
He makes me nervous. He's the only guy he's appointed who really makes me nervous. Everybody else has been within the realm of ordinary. Some have been really basic, solid Republican choices, like Elaine Chao, for example.
Yeah.
Totally ordinary. I mean, she's qualified, but
mainline
Republican,
mainline, yeah.
Ordinary. Any administration would hire her type of thing. Some of them have been a little further out, like DeVos at the education. She's very much in favor of vouchers. That's a little bit off the beaten path, but she certainly is qualified. She's been involved in the area for decades. Ben Carson at housing, that's an odd choice. I would have put him as Surgeon General or something like that, or HHS maybe, I don't know what, or NIH, or I don't know. But he's certainly a smart, competent, qualified guy. If he's smart enough, he'll get something. Hopefully, he'll have good advisors and make good decisions. So, by and large, Mattis seems excellent.
Yes.
I'm really hoping, quite frankly, that Christine Killebrand
from
New York doesn't try and put the kibosh on the 7-year thing. But he's good. Give him who he wants. This is someone we all want there.
Right.
So his choices generally have been okay.
Yeah, overall, again,
it's some insight, not much. All we have is tea leaves.
That's right. All we have. What we also have here is Elliot Eisenberg, who's sharing his thoughts with you. And listen closely, because within that brain is some pointers that I want to share, and I want him to share. We'll be right back. This is Streetwise. I'm Paul Berry.
Whether you are eyeing an apartment complex, office building, or buying your first home, Eagle Bank has the right lenders and the best solutions to fit your finances, needs, and goals. Eagle Bank, a local community bank with over 20 locations in the Metro DC area, has been serving the residential mortgage and commercial real estate market since 1998. Eagle Bank lenders know the neighborhoods, business climate, and the loan products that will make it happen for you. Learn more at eaglebankcorp.com. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
You're listening to Streetwise with Paul Berry on 1260 AM, The Answer.
We're very pleased to have Elliot F. Eisenberg, Dr. Eisenberg, in our studios today. He comes with a wealth of experience and talent and knowledge about this economy and how we function and how we roll. And we're just talking about, obviously, the man of the year, so decided last week by Time Magazine. There was no race there. I mean, that was just,
you know. He won it going away.
Absolutely.
Going away.
And as I said to you, we're trying to find out about this man in a matter of a couple of weeks here, what we haven't been able to find out in more than a year.
Right, the whole primaries and so on, the general. Right, we don't know much about him. We really don't. His campaign was policy light. that's not necessarily a bad thing either. Coming in with a lot of plans doesn't mean it's going to happen. Congressional relationships go off the rails, the economy, something. Right. I mean, things happen. But we really know less about him than any modern candidate.
And I've learned over my 60-some years, watch the money, honey. With the money gets funny, but the money hasn't gotten funny.
We're happy. Markets are thrilled. Gold is down. Rates are up. I mean, the Fed says they're going to raise rates probably a little faster maybe because of this. And this is all a lot of conjecture. And no, everyone has the caveats. But there's generally a bounce in Wall Street's step, certainly, and maybe a bounce in Main Street's step too.
Will that bounce remain if he picks a fight, if he continues to pick a fight with China?
Oh, that would change in a hurry. I mean, this whole Taiwan thing, right? Who knows how China will react, or the next time will they react differently?
Elliot, out of left field, whatever field, all of a sudden, in the middle of all of this confusion, he picks a fight with China.
Right.
And it apparently wasn't just, hapstance. I'm told now that they've been talking about this for months.
It was a long-term plan. Bob Dole's at the law firm that represents the prime minister or president of Taiwan. Yeah, this was a calculated decision, and it may make big dividends. I don't know, but the last thing we want is some sort of retaliatory act against us by China,
especially economically, right?
Right. Or even with North Korea or something, or they lob something at Japan over the Senkaku Islands. There's lots of places China can make trouble for us geopolitically, if not economically, and certainly economically as well.
Absolutely.
So this is risky.
I'm sorry. Someone said, and I'm not sure, again, I would quote the author. He says, you know, right now, in terms of our relationship with China, dollar-wise, if we have a hot water heater that goes out, we're finished. I mean, we owe them a lot of money.
And they've got problems, too. As the dollar has strengthened recently over the last about a year and a half or so, their pile of foreign reserves has been dropping quite dramatically.
Explain that. What does that mean?
So at the peak about 2 years ago, they had $4 trillion of foreign currency that they've earned because they sell more than they have trade surplus every year. They sell more stuff than they buy. The problem is their currency's weakening because growth is slowing down. And they are indulging in lots of fiscal stimulus in China to keep growth up. And as a result, the currency is falling down because interest rates are very low, but they're much higher here. So people want to sell yuan to get the higher interest rates that are here. Moreover, because the currency is depreciating, they also have an added incentive to get rid of their currency. So the pile of foreign currency China has is going down. They've got a host of problems there too. And don't think that the central government there is not aware of how to give red meat to their constituents. Sure, it's a totalitarian country, but they've got to keep people happy. Let's kick the Americans or do something. But they've got a lot of things on their plate as well. So they may not want to be very charitable towards him. So this is the tail risk, as economists call it, this far tail risk. The average may be fine, but there may be something way on the far right-hand side, five standard deviations away, that's going to cause us all kinds of harm. And that's one of the possibilities.
Right. But he certainly must see that. He has to. If he doesn't, he's certainly got the advisors who can tell him what the heck that means.
There are certainly available at the State Department. And you may not agree with them. That's fine. But you should certainly know. I hope he knows exactly what he's doing when he took the call or made the call. Took the call, I guess it was.
Yeah. Okay, so are we talking economic wars or are we talking physical wars here, a possibility? What are we talking about here?
Anything in between? If things go down the drain, they can go down the drain pretty quickly, absolutely. I think it wouldn't be a war with us necessarily, but if it goes down the drain, it's a matter of Putin maybe trying to grab a little bit more of something. I mean, their economy is weak, oil prices are low, they've got problems. He can't afford a very adventurous foreign policy, but nonetheless, he might grab if the grabbing is good. China, by contrast, could make trouble all over the place with Taiwan or just threaten Taiwan and see how we respond. If they ratchet up pressure on Taiwan, which we're by treaty obligated to protect, and we don't protect them, all of a sudden there's no man behind the curtain and he's exposed us as the fraud that we are, and that would make us look very bad. So we don't want to challenge. I mean, Taiwan's just 50 or 100 miles away from China. It's 10,000 from us. It's much easier for them to attack than for us to protect. So we don't need to show a force here. So these are really possible things. There might not be fighting in terms of physical wars or trade wars, but this geopolitical risk is certainly something that's not good at all.
And you, the point you make is so valid is that, you know, we right now, as far as we know, Mr. Trump has no red line that he's drawn daring anybody to cross. But in the direction that we're heading, we could get there to that red line.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, on the flip side here is, you know, Obama had that red line with Syria. You know, you use chemical weapons. We're going to go attack you. Nothing happened. Now, so the thing that Trump has in his favor strongly is no one knows who he is, and no one knows what he stands for, and no one knows if he's crazy. He has an incentive to cultivate this belief that he's crazy.
Yes.
Because if we believe that he's crazy and he'll do crazy things, people will give him what he wants. The Canadians will give a whole bunch of concessions. The Mexicans will give concessions because they don't want to upset potentially
crazy
uncle in the attic. If he's found out to be just a plain old ordinary guy with a little bit of bluster, he loses some edge. So my fear is there's some miscalculations here and miscalculations on both countries, and then you got a problem. But he does have an incentive to act a little bit strange and unpredictably.
Yeah.
It gives him mojo.
Yeah.
So this is important for him and for his bargaining positions with whatever it is he's bargaining with over whatever it will be.
And I think he's smart enough to know that. You know, again, we're not talking about somebody who says, oh, if I ever get to be, I'll be. He has been and is.
And is and will be, right.
That's right. So, I mean, these are the things, again, as you said, we're still trying to figure out.
But he's gotten the markets wildly excited. We haven't had this much excitement and euphoria in the stock market for a good long time.
How does this fit into our primary ally with Brexit and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Fitting there any?
I think there is. I think it's sort of bad news-ish, if you will.
Really?
I mean, you look at Brexit, people were really upset about immigration, upset about globalization. Here we have the same thing. In Italy just last week or a couple of days ago, they didn't pass the referendum. The premier resigns. People are nervous. We've had a long time of very poor economic growth. The upper classes have done well, but the middle and the lower classes have done badly. Actually, the only demographic group whose life expectancy has declined over the last 10 or 15 years has been white men. Mm-hmm. By drinking and opioids and so on and so forth, their life expectancy has declined. These are people who are very unhappy. Similarly in Britain, it's the same group. It wasn't London that was against staying in the EU. It was the hinterlands, if you will, the north and whatever. So there's a lot of anxiety and unhappiness, and we need faster economic growth. That's what we need.
How do we do that?
Yeah, how do we do it? Right. I mean, I would have liked to have seen immigration reform, bring in smart people, people with STEM, science, technology, math, and so on. Bring them in. You get a PhD in the States, stay. You're from a foreign country and you have great skills, stay. We want you. Trade reform would have been great, but that's off the table too. So the best we can hope for now is tax reform, good, serious tax reform that encourages firms to stay here that are here and move here who aren't here. Because you get the benefits of our law and order and courts and so on, and relatively low taxes. Our taxes, corporate taxes, are highest in the world. They don't bring in that much money. We could lower taxes, broaden the base, give fewer exclusions, lower the rate, keep it tax neutral, revenue neutral, and people would be happy, and that would be a good thing for us. So that's something he can certainly do.
Well, Elliot, we haven't been able to change the tax codes in
30 years.
Why would he have?
Because they
control all branches?
But it ain't that easy.
No.
Because there are 48 Democrats. They have to get rid of eight before they can really. You need 60 Republicans. They got 51, maybe 52 with the runoff in Louisiana.
Right. So
it'll be a hard stretch. They're going to get less done than they thought. The Republicans thought, because they had both houses since the last 4, 5, 6 years of Obama, they thought, oh, we could do a lot. They couldn't. Now they're going to have the presidency, and they're still going to see that it's not as easy as they think.
Yeah.
But I think tax reform, there could be some quid pro quo, some trades. I think Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, he's not Harry Reid. He's really a transactional kind of guy. I don't know him well, but I have met him on a number of occasions. And he's a very pragmatic guy, very partisan, but also very realistic. And he wants to make deals. So you got Trump making deals, Schumer making deals. They're going to make deals. So we're better off than we were in terms of actually making legislation, unless, you know, things blow up.
And as we look at this from the perspective of observation, me, and you're watching this, what signs are you looking for on the economic horizon that will tell you that things are getting better or they're getting worse?
I think there's nothing particularly new there. Look, unemployment's at 4.6. Obama's leaving Trump really the best economy we've had. It's slowly gotten better over the 8 years of Obama. Interestingly, Obama's second term as president will turn out to have been the third best presidential term for job creation ever, behind only Bill Clinton 1 and Bill Clinton 2.
Wow.
So it's quite a change from his first term when he comes in when things are falling apart because of the global collapse and so on. But unemployment is getting low. We don't have a lot of slack left in unemployment. Wages are starting to rise. This is all pleasant. What we really want to see, the Fed, the thing that would keep interest rates from going up would be more people entering the labor force. Can we get people who are 15 or 18 or 20 or 21 to get in the labor force? 15 is too young, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But youngsters to get in earlier. Older people to stay in longer. Maybe he could say something like, look, if you're over 65 or 67 and qualify for full social, every year you in the labor market, we'll cut your taxes by 1 or 2 percentage mm-hmm. points. Mm-hmm. We need more people to work. We're running out of workers. So a lot of his policies could be quite inflationary if there's no more workers. Wages start going up. This is not good either. But tax reform would be really a wonderful, it's the thing he could give us if he pushes hard on it. That would be a great thing.
So we need more workers on the job front. We need
absolutely
at the workplace.
Unemployment's 4.6. It's too low. We argue, oh my gosh, that doesn't count the real measure of unemployment. It's true, but who cares? It is what it is. You go to war with the army you got.
Yeah.
You know, we need more workers. We don't unemployment at the dot-com boom, the lowest unemployment like in forever. It was 3.9. We're approaching super low levels of unemployment. We need more people. We need people come in, work. You know, if Trump can somehow get our taxes down or rearrange our taxes, not mm-hmm. our not our payments, but our rates lower. Okay, no more deduction for this, no more for that. But how about a tax rate of 15 or 18 or 20%? Mm-hmm. We go, wow.
Right.
I'd work extra overtime.
Sure.
It wouldn't be phenomenal, but it would help. But the economy's fundamentally pretty good. He can help it along a little bit. We're not going to get phenomenal results either. The economy's doing too well at this point. We're not going to get 4% GDP growth. That's just not going to happen. Unemployment's already too low, right? We've already used up most of the spare resources that we've got. Labor productivity growth is not going all that well. It's the key problem, our economy. That's the thing he should focus on by fixing taxes to incentivize us to work more, save more, and invest more, and consume less. That would be the best thing he can do for us.
Elliot Eisenberg, to be continued as we talk about Eisenberg, as we talk about where we are going now in the Trump years. Who would have thunk it that we would ever get to the point that we're talking about Trump years? I appreciate you coming in. We value your opinion, and thanks for sharing it with us. Let's see what happens.
My Maybe pleasure. Thank you.
Another 3 months, we might sneak you over and see how things are.
I'd be delighted.
That'd be our pleasure. All right, folks, thank you so much. I hope you've learned a thing or two. Keep it in mind what Elliot has said. You've got to make plans for your life as well in 2017. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thank you so much.